Well, good morning. So let me start. So today I would like to do three applications, and all of them will be in electromagnetism. So first we will solve the electrostatics, then we will do the electrodynamics, and finally we will discuss some gauge freedom of the photon. So this will be three applications we have. So first is the electrostatics. So I hope that the first applications will be basically the repetition. The third one, maybe you haven't seen before, the electrostatics. So we'll be solving Poisson equation, which is basically the Laplace equation with the right-hand side. So imagine you have a so-called Dirichlet problem. So we have, you want to solve Laplace on phi, which is the electric potential, equals to some charge density on the right-hand side. And you impose, and so you want to solve this in the region omega, which is not necessarily the whole space, but it can be something. And you impose some boundary condition that phi equals to phi 0 on the boundary of omega. So this is the problem which we want to solve. The Dirichlet problem. Okay. So imagine you have some distribution of charges, for example, inside a sphere, and you want to find how is this electrostatic potential there. So in order to do that, we shall do that in several steps. So the first step is actually consider there is no, that omega is the whole space, and so that we have no boundary there. So first step is to construct free space Green's function, which I'll denote G3 because we are in three dimensions. So you want to solve Laplace on G3 equals to delta minus R0 in three dimensions. So in other words, you have a point charge of the magnitude 1, and you want to find the potential which it produces. So of course, this is Coulomb's law, but let's derive that. So then you would have the potential like that, and the electric field would be gradient of phi minus, which is in our case gradient of G3, which is d G3 over dr. That would be the electric intensity produced by that. So how to solve this problem? So you use the Stokes theorem. There's only one Stokes theorem in all dimensions for differential forms, which reads like if you have an integration of a form small omega over the boundary d omega, then this equals to the integral of the whole, over the whole region of d of omega. This is exterior derivative of the form. If you haven't seen this formula, don't worry. I will just write something which you definitely have seen. But just remember, you have always d on each side. You have d. So either you have d here or you have d there. So that's how you remember. Okay. So in particular, we shall be just using the Gauss theorem. So in particular, specifically, our divergence theorem. So we have omega, and so this d will be now divergence. So divergence of, so this is now the Laplace of G over dv. And this equals to the integral over the boundary. And now it's this times ds. So now, because we have spherical symmetry, so I can just introduce one quantity here, which will be the distance from the origin. So it will be r. And let me calculate what is the flux. So we already know that Nablow and G is dg over the r, now big R. And we choose the omega to be the sphere here. So then you can easily integrate over that. So this gives you 4 pi r square dg 3 over dr, which is the right-hand side. Of course, left-hand side, I want to be solving this equation. So now we have the delta of big R. So I've just chosen that this is 0. So r, small r becomes big R. So this is equal to 1. So we integrate the charge over this volume, and it's just 1. So from here, you immediately conclude the Coulomb's law. So from here, we have G3 equals to minus 1 over 4 pi, 1 over r. And this is Coulomb's law. So I have chosen, so I integrated that equation, and I've chosen the constant equal such that it has nice fall so that it vanishes at infinity. Coulomb. Okay, that's great. So, of course, you can do this in all dimensions. There is some problem if you calculate G2. But if you go to higher dimensions, there shouldn't be really a problem. And you will be asked to do that in tutorial today. So you will calculate G4 for me. OK, questions? Yes?
Why this is unique?
What do you mean, why is it unique? I'm choosing the boundary condition that G must vanish at infinity, and then it's unique.
Why?
Good question. Anybody answer? Okay. Yes?
Because isn't it true that if you have two solutions of the Laplace equation with the same boundary conditions on some closed set, then they must be the same? Because if you take their difference, then the boundary condition is zero, and any solution of Laplace equation which is zero on some closed set must vanish.
So the second step is so-called Green's identities. And so first one is really trivial. So again, I shall use the divergence theorem, the Gauss theorem. So you have divergence of, and now let me take two scale functions, phi and chi. So you have phi and chi, and then you construct a quantity like that over dv. So first, you can use this thing here. So this is just the integral over d of omega phi on chi times ds. OK. On the other hand, I can apply this operator here, and I can use the Leibniz rule to calculate this and that. So this is the integral over omega phi Laplace on chi plus Nabla phi times Nabla chi. OK, so this ugly thing is called Green's first identity. So if you look here and there, this is Green's first identity. Okay, so now this can be also written, if you want, as d chi over dn, where n is the normal of the boundary. So this will be d over dn. It's just a notation. That's what you mean by that. So this thing can be also written as phi d chi over dn ds, if you want. So OK. So now let me write this identity once more, but now exchange phi and chi. So then it would have an identity d omega, and now I'm really exchanging phi and chi. So it's chi nabla on phi times ds, and it's equals to chi phi plus nabla on phi times nabla on chi. So of course, I want to now subtract these two things. So take this thing and subtract from there this thing, or the other way around. Let me do this one minus that one. So then I have on the left-hand side is chi nabla phi ds. Okay, minus. I want the first one minus the second one. Doesn't matter. But so then I have phi d omega phi d chi over dn minus chi d phi over dn ds. And then I have, so this term is the same as that term, so they will cancel. And I have integral over omega phi Laplace on chi minus chi Laplace on phi. Now this guy is called the second Green's identity. So now let me apply this identity. Apply this to so one scale will be my scale potential which I want to find, and the other one will be the free Green's functions which we derived in step A. Okay, so we know that Laplace on phi equals to minus rho. So now, let me at this stage, let me still think that we have basically unspecified, so no boundary conditions at this stage yet. Okay, so then we have d omega from there, and it's phi dg3 over dn minus g3 d phi over dn ds, and this equals to integral over omega. So now we have phi, and we have Laplace acting on chi. So we constructed that so that it's delta, where chi is g3, so this is delta r minus r0 plus g3, and Laplace on phi is rho dv. So this equals to phi at r0 and the integral over omega g3 times rho. So we have derived a beautiful formula, phi at a point inside the region is given by minus integral over the region g3 times rho plus what I have at the boundary. So it's d omega phi dg3 G3 over dN minus G3 d phi over dN. So this looks really, really beautiful. It seems that we have solved our problem. So we expressed at any point inside the region, we know what is G3. We know what is the distribution of the charges. So this is fine. We know what is that. We know what is that. So it seems that we have solved the problem. Is there any problem with this formula? Anybody sees a problem with this formula? Nobody?
It appears that the both sides solve cannot solve it.
Can you repeat that and louder? And
that the C appears in the both sides of phi appears in the both sides of equation, so we cannot solve it.
Exactly. Thank you so much. So this is, by the way, called the third identity. Okay, so precisely that's what is happening. So in order to use this formula, you would need to prescribe how phi behaves on the boundary and how its derivative behaves on the boundary. But if you actually do that, then the problem doesn't have the solution. So you cannot prescribe both. You either prescribe that or that, but you cannot prescribe both. So there is demons in this formula. So what, it's so beautiful that we should use it somehow, right? So, and the trick is actually to use not this free space function, but to use something called Dirichlet function, Green's function. So step C is now to use Dirichlet Green's function.
David?
Yes?
Could you explain why you can't specify the value of phi as derivative?
Just try it. Just try it. So, yeah. The problem is not well posed. So really, it's like describing, I don't know. So if you have a problem in mechanics, you can start it that you fix x or you fix x dot or whatever. But here as well, but you cannot prescribe both. So if you have boundaries, so you have here and there point, and you fix the value of x, but if you fix the value of x dot as well, then you cannot solve that. It's precisely the same thing. Dirichlet Green's function. On a region omega. And so, instead of G3, you would like to find a function which first satisfies the equation. Okay, let me write it like. Well, this is the definition of the Green function, fine. But I require this only on omega. So I don't require this in the whole space, but I require that only on omega. And second, I want that this guy vanishes on the boundary. So it's a different function. It's not G3 because we know that it's non-zero over the whole space. It behaves like 1 over R. But I want something slightly different, but which has this property inside the region only and that. Okay. So now you can do the same trick as we did when deriving this formula. So you start from the second Green's identity. Now you take phi it's the same thing, but chi will be g instead of g3. So if you do that, then you arrive at exactly at the same formula where instead of g3, I write g. But now g vanishes on d omega, so the formula becomes phi r 0 equals to minus omega g times rho plus integral over d omega phi d g over dm ds. And this is the solution. So for here, so this is also solution of our Dirichlet problem. So for this, I only need phi. I don't need the derivative of that. But of course, I need to find this special green function, g. Okay. So the question is how to find it. In of course, in general, it's very, very difficult. But there are some simple cases where you can actually guess it. And very useful method is so-called method of images. So for example, so method of images. Example.
Civic?
Yes?
Is this a solution with the boundary condition?
Yeah, so now, yes, exactly. So now I can specify this phi equal to phi 0 on the boundary. And this integral gives me the solution. Yes. So this is the solution of the Dirichlet problem. If, on the other hand, you didn't prescribe phi on the boundary, but you prescribe its derivative on the boundary, then I would need to use a different function, which would be called Neumann function, Neumann Green function. And then I would require that not that this is equal to 0 on the boundary, but its derivative is 0 on the boundary. Then this term would vanish. And I would have a solution specified in terms of the derivative of phi on the boundary. That's another possibility. OK, so the example which I give you is very simple. And then you will be solving more difficult examples during. So imagine. So this is my z-axis. And imagine you have a conducting plate here. And then somewhere here is a charge sitting. And because it's conducting plate, the potential on it is equal to 0. And you want to find, so now in this region for z bigger than 0, you want to find what is the potential produced by this charge in the presence of this conducting plate. And I have no space, so that was stupid. Okay. Let me put it like that. So that Q, my conducting plate. And so you need to really guarantee that phi equals to 0 here. And solve the Laplace equation here on this boundary. So then you have the problem, solve Laplace equation with this source, where you have the boundary at z is equal to 0, phi equals to 0. And so how we would solve that? You basically say, well, I don't care about the boundary. And there may be another charge, q, exactly at the same distance. Then you know that from Coulomb's law, some electric, field lines, and the potential is perpendicular to that. So then you know that the potential will be automatically 0 here. And so you guarantee, by putting the charge here, you guarantee this boundary condition. But because the charge is outside the region you are interested, it will not change this property here. So this will be still true for z bigger than 0. So you can solve this problem by saying, well, let's forget about this and imagine there is another charge there. So then what is the green function for this is simply, some notation here. So you can imagine that this is described by the vector d, which is 0, 0, and d. And then this one will be 0, 0, minus d. And the green function is simply 1 over 4 pi So first charge is negative, so it's 1 over r minus t. And the other charge is, well, this is our first charge, and the other charge is positive, well, negative, but now it's positive thing. So 1 over 4 pi, 1 over r plus t. So this is your Green function, and you can easily check that for z bigger than 0, it satisfies Laplace g equals to delta r minus r0, r minus d. We have the charge here. And that g at z equal to 0 equals to 0. So it's precisely the Green function which we want. And then you can immediately write down the solution. So let me do a small remark. So as well as you can, so we have the we have solved the problem of charge in the presence of the plate by saying, well, there's no plate and there's another charge there. But of course, you can do it oppositely as well. And sometimes it may be simpler. It may simplify a problem. So you may say, well, instead of two charges, I'll be just considering one charge and some boundary. And so the reverse idea is also useful. And for example, one of the uses is in the calculation in black hole spacetimes, useful for calculations in black hole spacetimes. So you know, or you will learn quite soon, that black holes, they have the horizon. So this is an inside the horizon. Well, what is inside that cannot communicate from the outer region. So if you are interested what physics is happening outside the black hole, then actually you don't need to know what is inside that. If you so the first line would be the event horizon, this one. And the other one will be a fictitious plate, a fictitious membrane which you put outside the horizon. And so this will be your boundary. And so you don't care what is inside. So I can forget. If I'm only interested in physics which is outside the black hole, so I can forget about the interior. Of black hole, and can prescribe so by considering boundary data on membrane. And this is very, very useful tool. Outside horizon, black hole horizon. And okay. And so this membrane will have some physical properties. So this thing is called membrane paradigm. And it's really just a tool how to calculate these things. Nobody believes that there is a membrane outside even horizon. Membrane paradigm. And it comes from 70s, and people like Thorne were interested in that. And so this membrane has some physical properties, such as, I don't know, charge density you can prescribe to it. So it has viscosity. It has conductivity. For example, for rotating black hole, in natural units, what do you think the conductivity will be? So in natural units, I have only pi, so it must be 1 over some pi or whatever. So it's 1 over 5, 4 pi, and so on. It has charge density. and so on. So really, you can do all the calculations outside the black hole, just saying, well, I have this boundary with these physical properties. I calculate everything. I can't forget that the piano fell inside the black hole or whatever, that your friend, well, hopefully not friend. Okay, and so on. Questions? Application number two, electrodynamics. Dynamics, and so this is a very standard thing, so I hope it will be repetition, and I hope you will find the mistake which I keep doing all the time. So basically, I showed you how to solve the diffusion equation yesterday. I showed you how to solve the Laplace equation. So the last fundamental equation which remains to be solved is the wave equation. So so the electromagnetic potential. And so this the same technique is, of course, used for gravitational fields. So if you will be discussing with Neil in 2 weeks' time, the linearized gravity is precisely the same calculation. So electromagnetic potential in the Lorentz gauge obeys the wave equation. So
actually, Lorentz without B.
Okay, thank you. There's many without.
It's the Lorentz gauge.
Yeah. There's many Lorentzes. Okay, thank you. So it satisfies the equation. So this is in mu goes from 0 to 3, which is equal to minus j mu. And by box, I mean just minus second derivative with respect to time plus the three-dimensional Laplace acting on a mu. So now, the standard way how to solve this is just to use the Fourier transform. So in order to solve this, we need a Green's function. So we need to solve Laplace on G R T equals to minus is just convention here, R delta T. So you need to solve that. And in order to do that, you apply the inverse Laplace transform to both sides. So then I have 1 over 2 pi to power 4 integral over the k and integral over the omega g k omega. Now you have the box acting on that. So I commuted box with the integration. E to I k times r minus I omega t. So this is just, so we had before just plus, but now you have, so that was an Euclidean signature, but now we have Lorentzian signature, so that's why the minus is here. Okay, so that's on the left hand side if I do the inverse Laplace transform, Fourier transform, and on the right hand side I just need to transform this delta, but I showed you the formula yesterday, so it's minus 1 over 2 pi to the power 4 integral e to I k times r minus I omega t. So that's the formula for the delta function. So then you see that you can immediately compare what you have on the left hand side and what you have on the right hand side. So okay, so this thing will bring me k square and omega square up to some signs. So from here, conclude g k omega in this Fourier space equals to k square minus omega square. Just comparing what you have on the left hand side. You apply the derivative here, so I'm differentiating t with respect to t twice, which brings me omega square here, differentiated with respect to R twice, which can be K square here. So this is that. And of course, now you want that not in Fourier space, but in the original X space. So you have to return back. One over two pi four e to I. So now let me choose the coordinates such. So this is some vector k, and let me choose it so that it has an angle theta between k vector and r vector. So then I can write instead of.
Shouldn't be without the two pi.
You had it already. I'm doing the inverse one. So it should be like that, right?
So why did you have the 1 over 2 by 4 in the first place?
That was also inverse.
This was also inverse. Yeah. Thank you. So now I choose that so that k is now the magnitude of the vector k and times the magnitude of the vector r times cosine theta. So this is just the scalar product between k and r. Minus I omega t, and then this will be just k square minus omega square, which is my Green's function there, and then I want to integrate over d3k, so it's I can integrate over these angles, it's 2 pi, then I have d cosine of theta and k square dk, where this is just magnitude, and the omega, and then this, so now, of course, cosine goes from minus 1 to 1, and k, because it's the magnitude, is the spherical coordinates, it goes from 0 to infinity. Is this clear? Okay, so now, so you can immediately integrate this guy, so it goes from minus 1 to 1. So this gives you, so these 2 pi cancel those 2 pi. So it's 1 over 2 pi cube, 2 pi cube. If I integrate this with respect to cosine, then this guy will go down. So it's 1 over ir from here. But I also have to divide by k here. So instead of k square, I'll just write k. So this is integral from minus infinity to infinity d omega. An integral from 0 to infinity dk, k e to I k r minus e to minus I k r divided by k square minus omega square. And hopefully that's all right. Oh, maybe I can use this one. So now you need to calculate this integral here. So this is from 0. This integral here. And I never calculated it properly, so please tell me where I'm doing the mistake. So I claim that this integral, so because you are going from 0 to infinity, but you have this term and that term, so it should be integral from minus infinity to infinity only of the first term, because this is even function which you are integrating. Okay, so it should be an integral from minus infinity to infinity k e to I k r over k square minus omega square. Okay, so we can draw the plane, and of course this integral doesn't make sense because you are encountering the poles. So you have one pole at minus omega, the other one at plus omega, so you need to go around those. So basically, the integral is just the principal value. What do you mean by this integral is the principal value of this integral.
What is I?
Sorry?
Is that a hole? How do we get
it? Because the function is
odd. So this function, so if you take this function here, well, I'm saying this guy is from 0 to infinity, and that guy because the function is even, I can extend it from minus infinity to infinity and take just one of them. So this is nothing else, something like sine times sine of x times x, and this does not change things. So
you have two.
No, but you have two exponentials. So, I mean, when you change the second exponential variable to minus x, you get the same integral. So thus you have two of them.
Yeah.
So you go from minus infinity to infinity.
No.
The other one just goes from minus infinity to zero.
And so I call this function to be f of k, the whole thing. So now you are integrating that. Of course, the integral over this whole thing will vanish. So this is what I want, and it just picks the values here as you go around the poles. So the integral should be equal to.
How do you choose how to avoid the poles? Why upper?
Well, if you choose lower,
yeah.
then it's the same thing, but you have to.
But why are your contours I1 and I2 going anti-clockwise?
Sorry?
Yeah, why is I1 and I2?
Okay, it's just a convention. So I want to claim that the integral is I1 plus I2.
Your arrow just not connecting the one
way. So I mean, you have to have the arrows going in the same direction.
You want to read
the direction? Wow.
Okay. Of course. I can do that, and then I would get zero because there is no pulse inside. But I want to say that this guy here, integration is this plus that. Okay.
Now we will have a minus sign.
No, but the integral over this thing is zero, right? Because
yes.
It's there's no pulse.
I mean, the contour has to connect itself somehow. And then you haven't closed the contour if you change the arrows like this.
Okay, you can draw your arrows as you want. at omega fk. So do you agree with this? So that's exactly the question. So I would need 2 pi. But I cannot actually. So tell me where I'm doing the mistake. So now this residuum here, for example, so the function is there, so it's holomorphic. The first thing is holomorphic, so I just plug omega there, so it's minus instead of minus e omega r, which is there, and then I have to differentiate this one, so it's 2k, so it's minus 2 omega. And this guy will be omega e to I omega r divided by 2 omega. So what I'm getting it all the time, and it's wrong. I don't know why. I pi over 2. So m omega cancels. This minus sign cancel. It's e to minus I omega r plus e to I omega r. So now can you find the factor of 2? It should be twice as much. Can you find the factor of 2? If not, it's your homework.
David?
Yeah?
I think you might perhaps want to integrate from 0 to infinity because we're in spherical coordinates in k-space.
Once more? It might be?
If we integrate from 0 to infinity in k-space, not from minus infinity to infinity. Because we have spherical coordinates, so k is sort of the radius.
Exactly, so it must give from 0 to infinity.
So that's
right?
Perhaps the factor of 2.
No, but
it's
sure. Correct.
We used
that from 0 to
8.
It says 0 there. I had
problems with
that as well.
Sorry, this one is 0.
This is a 0. Okay.
But then I have two of them, so I say it goes from minus infinity to infinity.
So that's.
Well, anyway, so if you can find this, I'll be extremely happy. But let me just assume that we have received twice as much as we have received. So we have GRP. Equals to now. So we have 8 And then we have, we should have 16, 1 over 16 if we are right, but we are missing this factor of 2. So it's 1 over pi square, 1 over r, 1 over r, integral from minus infinity to infinity, e to minus I omega. Now I pick up, I'm still missing, sorry for that, I'm still missing this minus I omega t here.
Maybe I have a question.
Yes?
I noticed that if you choose a different contour, if you shift below the real axis.
Okay.
And take the contour with the two singularities inside.
Okay.
You'll get the correct answer.
But then you also have to include the residues that are causing the
There will be residues. So.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got exactly the same thing.
Okay, very good. It will be part of your tutorial, actually, to choose. So you can choose either, indeed, you can choose like going up and up, and you can choose up and down, and down and down, and you get different results, I think. R plus T plus E to I omega T minus R. D omega. Okay, so we can think about it. So now you are integrating the exponential here. So what is that? Oh, the whole thing. So we derived it yesterday. We are just integrating the exponential. It gives you the delta function. So this is. And then I have to have 2 pi in front of that. So this is equal to 1 over 4 pi r. And then this guy will give me delta function r plus t. And this guy will give me delta function r minus t plus delta r minus t. Or t minus r, doesn't matter. So this guy is called advanced retarded. Not that it is stupid, but it means that the sign will arise actually later. And if you want, I don't know, did you cover this? Yeah, you cover these derivatives of distributions or whatever. So this you can write as 2 pi delta r square minus t square. So, yes.
When you plug your result, you'll get difference, looks like in form, but not in form. You pi pi.
No. So I have 8 here, and then I have. If I had just twice as much, then I would have. Yeah. So please think about this. Maybe it's completely wrong what I show you, but hopefully not completely wrong. Okay. So what does it tell you is that r square minus t square equals to 0. So this is light cone propagation. So light cone propagation. I shouldn't write here. So it's light cone propagation. Okay, and it consists, so either you can send signals like forward in time, or you can send signals backward in time, but they always stay on the light cone. They always propagate like that at the speed of light. And so in classical electrodynamics, you usually say, well, the advanced potential doesn't make sense. And so you just say, well, this is not physical, because how can the signal arrive before you send it? And only this guy is taken. So this is classical electrodynamics. On the other hand, people are actually trying to find that they can make a reasonable thing of the advanced one as well. And it's called Feynman-Virel theory. So Feynman-Virel theory. And you can read it. It's like 30s. And basically, they formulated electrodynamics using both these potentials, advanced as well as retarded. And they showed that It's very, very amazing. Everything works. And basically what happens is that you have action and distance. So you don't need fields at all. You just if you use both these potentials, you can get rid of fields at all. So you don't have field theory anymore. You have just something like Newtonian theory, where you have immediate action at distance if you use both these potentials. But the price you have to pay for that is that at the boundary of the universe, you have to have some absorber. You have to have some matter which actually kills unwanted fields. So you can formulate that, and you can read it, and Feynman writes about this theory in his book. And basically, yeah, so I think it's beautiful theory, so it probably doesn't work. But in classical electrodynamics, so Feynman-Wheeler theory both, and it leads to action at distance. And many people actually try to formulate gravity as an action in distance, but all of them failed. So classical electrodynamics, you use only the retarded one. I cannot write this one. Sorry for that. So we have derived that in classical electrodynamics, you have the potential have you ever read this? Surely you must be joking, Mr. Feynman. So he describes this theory there. And so it is probably unsuccessful. It led him to this path integral formulation. So we have derived a mu at t and r equals to 1 over 4 pi. Now I'm using only the retarded one, j mu. Now, so I have delta r minus t, but now I have to integrate over t prime. So this gives me t minus r minus r prime at r prime. So I integrated over time already, divided by r minus r prime, d3 r prime. And of course, when you will be doing the linearized gravity, it will be exactly the same thing, except what will stand here is the gravitational, is the, well, perturbation of the metric, and what will stand here will be the stress energy tensor. Questions? Okay, the final thing, the third application, and it will be hopefully a short one, and hopefully you haven't seen it, so it's too much. Light cone gauge. Okay, light cone coordinates or whatever. Light cone and gauge fields. And so you'll see how advanced thing you can already do. So there is a rule, at least for bosons, that in gauge theories, number of real degrees of freedom. So how many really physical states you have is given by the number of the apparent one. So you use some quantities to describe your fields, and they have some apparent degrees of freedom, number of apparent . So in electromagnetism, it will be the potential A mu. In gravity, it will be the metric G mu nu. Apparent degrees of freedom minus twice the degrees of freedom of the gauge function. So that's the rule, which can be proved. But let me just derive it in very special case. So let me consider an example of this. And it will be Maxwell field, which is, of course, the simplest one. And you know already everything for that, except one tiny, tiny thing, which is this light cone coordinates. But it's a very, very simple thing. So Maxwell field. So you are used to the metric of the Minkowski space to be minus 1 and plus 1. So usually you write a vector A to be A0 and AI. And the metric is just eta is just minus 1, 1, 1, 1, whatever you want. How many ones you want. So now you can actually write, you can introduce new coordinates. So you take one of these out, and you introduce A0 to be 1 half, A plus, I need the opposite one. OK, so instead of A0 and A1, I introduce A plus and A minus by these relations. So A1 equals to 1 over root of 2, A plus minus A minus. Then you write your vector A as A plus, A minus, and the rest. So you take one of these I's, let's say 1, and do such a combination that instead of A0 and A1, you have A plus and A minus. And if you do that, the metric now becomes, instead of minus 1 and 1 here, becomes 0, minus 1, minus 1, 0, and then you have the rest, as you had before. So the product of two vectors, A times B, is minus A plus B minus A minus B plus, and then AI BI. OK, it was just the preparation. Is it nothing really? You cannot understand. It's just really introducing two new things, taking this and that. Huh? OK, good. Thank you. OK, so this is the whole trick we need. So now what is the Maxwell equation, or what is the equation for the Maxwell field? It's d square a mu minus d mu divergence of A. So now this previously we said this Lorentz condition equal to 0, but now we keep it, and it's equal to 0. So this is your equation of motion. And this is invariant. And the gauge transformations under delta A mu to be d mu of the function chi. So you know that if I take any function and take its derivative, then this will be just pure gauge. Think. OK, so now, well, you use the Fourier transform. So you write A mu x to be, and now we are in d dimensions. So 2 pi to d integral d dp e to I p times x a mu p. So if you do that, and you use the properties and plug it in into that equation there, and use the properties of the Fourier transform, so derivatives just become multiplication by p. So you get equation p square a mu minus p mu p times a equals to 0. So you have algebraic equation now. And this is now in the Fourier space, so this is function of p. The gauge thing will become just I pi mu times chi. Okay, so that's trivial. So now, if you have non-zero vector p, you can always arrange it so that p plus is non-zero. So take p plus, which is not equal to 0. So if you have zero vector, then you cannot do that. But if you have non-zero, I can always rename the quantity so that p plus is not equal to 0. So then using this equation here, so now using this, so you have dA plus, I can write this indices up as well. So dA plus equals to I p plus times chi. So if I choose chi, so I can always choose chi such, because this is non-zero, then that this guy will become, that A plus will become 0. So choice of chi, then A plus equals to 0. So I can always get whatever I want by this thing just by choosing chi. So we have A plus equal to 0. Now take the equation of motion here and take mu equals to plus. So then what I'm getting is p square A plus minus p plus p times a equals to 0, right? That's my equation here. But I arrange already a plus so that it's equal to 0. P plus is non-zero, so p times a must be 0. Okay. So this is 0, that is non-zero, this must be 0. But what is p times a? So by that scale product, which I wrote somewhere, so we have minus p plus a minus, minus p minus a plus, plus pi ai equal to 0. This is p times a. So this is 0, we already know. P plus is non-zero, so we can write down what A minus is in terms of AIs. So A minus is 1 over P plus PI AI. So you see that the only independent ones must be these AIs. So in D dimensions, you have D minus 2 degrees of freedom. But let me continue what we are left with the equation. So everything what is left outside of that equation, we know that p times a is 0. We have p square a I equals to 0. That's what is left. So now we have two possibilities. Either p square is equal to 0 or ai is equal to 0. If ai is equal to 0, then we have all fields equal to 0. So if p square is not equal to 0, then this is called off-shell. And we know that we have 0 degrees of freedom. Because all a's must be equal to 0. If this is not 0, this is 0, but hence a minus is 0, a plus was already 0. So 0 degrees of freedom. On the other hand, if you have p square equal to 0, this is called on shell, then this can be anything we want. It's really the real degrees of freedom. So ai describe the real degrees of freedom from d minus t to degrees of freedom. So last note. So if you are staring at that equation there, so just without doing this a plus minus gymnastics, so if p square is not equal to 0 and starting with that equation there, then I can of course divide it by it. So then I have a mu equals to 1 over p square p mu p times a. But by this discussion, so this a mu must be just a pure gauge thing. Because we know that when p square is not equal to 0, there are no degrees of freedom. So this must be a pure gauge. So it must be pure gauge. And you can convince easily yourself that this is just given by the gauge field, which is given by one, like that. So if you take the gauge field like that, you can get rid of this field A mu. And so this kills A mu. So indeed. And final remark, so one photon state will be two d minus 1, a polarization vector, and then you have to create these particles plus I a p plus pi acting on the vacuum. So that's it. Questions? Have you seen this already? Or yeah, you have seen. Okay, so sorry for that. So we'll try to do this for graviton so that you have some fun in tutorials.
So if you want to create an arbitrary state of the photon, it's described by only these degrees of freedom. So if I'm acting on the vacuum and I create the particle, so this is the creation operator. should be regular. Then I can create this arbitrary polarization. So this will be just a composite or whatever. Each character chooses which polarizations I want to create.
What's the index on the
I go from 2 to b minus 1. And this is psi I. Okay, just write it like that. You can create the arbitrary momentum as well. But so forget about the momentum. So let's create zero momentum. So then you have A I bigger. And then you have B plus, if you want to add momentum, you need B plus and B I.
Can you just read it on the board? Because it's white on white.
Oh, it's written here.
Yeah.
Why did I write it again?
For that.
Short one. The two times we have to look at it.
So the photon state can be written as some minus one. And if you have the polarization vector, it just chooses which I you want to create, and then you have A dagger. AI dagger. Acting on omega on the vacuum
space.
But then you can create this arbitrary momentum into the label.
Yeah.
So I can create this Y plus, and I can create this MPI.
Okay.